accession number 28896, reel 21.
Mr. Blewett, reel 21. You rejoined your unit in the Anzio area. Do you recall what happened?
Yes, when we left the rear party, there was about six of us who'd been sent back to Naples, and then those six of us went back to rejoin the company. There was only one of our platoon. The others were different platoons, HQ and whatever. And I went back up with a lad called Lance Corporal Walker. And we got on the boat. There was plenty of ships going up and down from Naples up to Anzio, like a bus route it was. And when we got about a couple of miles off Anzio, he said, "Get your tin hat on." And I said, "I'd never had a tin hat on, you know, at that time." And he said, "Get your tin hat on," he said. "This is where it starts." And so I nipped down to where my kit bag was, get the tin hat out, and felt a bit of a fool, stood on the... And then I realised what he meant when we sort of got round the corner into the bay and that there were shelling. I thought, "Oh, God, what have I done? Come back up here when I could have been stuck in Naples for a week or two." But anyway, we got there, laid off the shore.
What was the scene like looking into...
Well, there was quite a lot of ships, mostly Navy ships. When I say Navy ships, I mean like destroyers and things like that. And there was also quite a lot of ships with stores, which were getting unloaded by our docks. Recognised one or two of the drivers, like, and giving them a wave. Anyway, we got one of our platoon, which was recognisable but with a B on the side, and they come alongside, and so me and Larry Walker, we made our way down via the net that they got in, got dumped in the back of the duck, and then they took us. When he took us and our the stores he had, he dropped us off first at this place, and it was like a car park. Larry, of course, had been there before, and just dumped our stuff out, and I reported into the office. This Lieutenant Gibbs that I mentioned before, "Oh, glad to see you back, Blewett. How are you?" I said, "Oh, a lot better, thank you very much, sir." "Right," he said, "you'll want to go with your own section." I said, "Yeah." He said, "I think you'll find him down the 39 steps." And I said, "31? He said, "Well, they all have different nicknames," he said, "and that one is just round the corner from the office and down this cellar." And I found out later that nearly all our section, our platoon, there was a big car park where the ducks were when not in use, and the every other building was occupied, but it was the cellars that was occupied. Then there was hardly any. There was only one building actually that was on the top, occupied by our lads on the top of, you know, above ground. All the rest were downstairs. Anyway, I went down seeing the lads. "Oh, champion, well." It's like going home to the family again. Very nice. And this officer had said, "Well, get yourself sorted out," and then he said, "We won't throw you in the deep end. You'll start tomorrow morning, 8 o'clock."
Just so. Before we go on, was your position in a town or a village or something?
It was a town, but it had been shelled and bombarded up, you know, all ruins. There was hardly any buildings.
And was it a coastal town?
Yeah, yes, it was a little. There was Natuna and Anzio were very close together, and apparently, when we've seen later on the map, there were seaside resorts and it was a nice little bay, and the landing where the beach was, no problem at all.
And the terrain itself, because at Anzio it was basically you were stuck on the beaches, weren't you?
Yeah, we were.
Was that still the situation there, that the front line wasn't far away?
That's right. It was maybe about 4 or 5 mile at the most.
And were the German positions on high ground?
We were surrounded more or less, but again, finding out later, it was the Americans that were in charge of the landing. And this, there was a film made of it, and it was quite true as well, made by the Yanks, of course, and when they landed, he was instructed by General Mark Clark, don't make the mistake that I did. Get in and dig in. Apparently Mark Clark at one time he'd been in charge of something and he went flying away and then found himself in dire trouble and he had to retreat. Anyway, this American general, whoever he was, he decided to do it as Mark Clark said, and he just went so far and stopped and dug in. His attitude was that apparently was that they're not going to take us unawares, we're going to get dug in, set up, and artillery and everything ready for them to come. But as a matter of fact, if he'd have kept going straight on, he could have practically been to the gates of Rome.
Were you then under pretty heavy fire as a daily routine?
It was spasmodic. We saw this later. We saw this gun, it was nicknamed Anzioani. It was on a real massive gun, it was, and it used to come down, fire about half an hour of shot shells into the, couldn't miss the something, he'd about hit something, and into the bay more, the ships, not so much on the land, but into the water. And
what was the condition of your unit when you joined them? What state were they?
I was told I was a silly bugger for coming back. You should have stopped where you were. Most that was the general impression from the lads. What did you come back for? I said, well, you're here, aren't you? Yeah, but you're in Naples. He said, you could have stopped, you know, one or two of them. My good friend. And he was a bit really, well, he wasn't well. He went, I hadn't been there only a couple of days, and he had to go into the hospital, which was a tent. He was suffering from typhoid fever, I think it was, he said he had.
What was his name again?
Clarkson, Kenny Clarkson. He used to work for the Moore's Fish Shop in Cockerton, been there since he was a boy. And he was engaged to my sister, that's what, he was the one that threw his stripes in, reverted to the ranks, which I thought he was daft for doing, but he thought, well, I might as well come with you, he said, as go on my own somewhere else. So when I got down into the cellar, there was one or two beds which they'd acquired from the Americans. And so I put my kit on, went round. Don't be going out without your tin hat on, you know, that was the general. Because you never know when he starts.
Had they had any casualties at all?
Yeah, they had one or two. Mostly in the car park. When I said before, any time you had it spare time, he used to slap paint or grease or whatever. And they were doing that when this lad was doing it. It was from Newcastle, I forget his name. And one direct hit on his duck while he was painting it. And that was the second day I was there. And then about a couple of days after that, eventually the penny dropped and they got a bulldozer up And they used to go and dig into this car park where the trees and everything were, and they dug in so that you could just run your duck in to this pit, and it was just like level. Stop, not so much for our benefit, but to make sure that the ducks didn't get it. That was the main impression. I thought, well, you're here, you just have to make the best of it.
What kind of spirits were they in? I mean, they weren't.
I think if they'd had to go, if they were told to go back to Naples, they wouldn't have been they wouldn't have been dallying about. It was, there was nothing there as just the buildings, which were absolutely knocked out with the guns and whatnot, shells. And the, there wasn't so much any air activity. It was just the shells that were doing all the damage. And the, where we were in this cellar, right above us, this house, there was three lads who were still sleeping in there, you know, using it as their own room. And we thought, what the hell are you doing up there? You're stupid, you know, because everybody else was down in the cellars out their own. And they had it in their head that the Germans were using it as an observation post, so they wouldn't aim for that. The logic in it seemed pretty good, I suppose, because it wasn't until the very last week we were at Anzio that it got hit. And as it happened, they were all out on the working at the time, and it got hit and demolished. So there was a bit of logic, I suppose, in that. But
when you were out on your car park doing duties and you came under shelling, where did you find your shelter?
Underneath the dock, the deepest place we could see. As soon as I started, everybody used to just abandon doing what they did do and get under the dock.
What's it like to be under shell fire? From your own personal view?
The only thing I could think is you try to get your whole body under your tin hat, crouched as much as you can, don't show anything, huddle up. And the first time it happened to me was I'd been working, and just coming back from a drop in the stores, and they started shelling. So I just pulled up, got out underneath the duck with my tin hat on, and hoped that I wouldn't get hit, or the duck wouldn't get it. I didn't mind so much the duck getting it, as long as I didn't get it. And that lasted for about quarter of an hour, and then it eased off, and you carried on back to...
Can you hear the shells coming?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. That's the first time you can hear it, and then you're waiting for it to bounce, you know. And like I say, hoping that it wasn't in your vicinity. The time when, after Clarkson had got out of the hospital, which was an American camp, a bell tent, and he was stuck in the middle of it, I'd gone up to see him. It was just on the coast road, and I'd gone up to see him. And I was peering down into his... And they said, don't be coming in here. He said, whatever it was. It was typhus, I can't remember now. He said, if you come here, you'll be back in here with me. You just come out of hospital, get away. So you're all right. Yes, I'm fine. He said, you're just stuck there. But after he'd come out, and we were going out to the ship one day, we used to always try and work together. Our duty was together, and... work together, and our leisure time we tried to keep together. And we were going out to from the ship one day, and they started shelling. And it went over my, you know, as you say, you couldn't do anything. You were just coming back at 5 miles an hour on the water. You could, if you knew where you were about, the shells were landing, you could maybe do a little bit of zigzag, but you think, well, it's going to hit me, it'll hit. So he just kept on going straight. And this shell come over me, and Clarkson was at the back of me about 50 yards, I would think, maybe more, 50, 75. And all of it come over me, and just a big bang, and the water rose up, and I looked behind me, couldn't see Clarkson, and I thought, oh hell, the British duck. And then all of a sudden, when the water seeped down, he comes ploughing through it. I thought, thank God for that. I would have really been hurt as much as him, I think, if it did. That would have happened to him.
Does shelling affect your nerves?
Oh yeah. As a matter of fact, there was two or three of them in the rear party. That's what they got sent back for. We called them bomb happy, but that's what it was. Really, really frightened you. There was an article in the 8th Army News, which they used to send round now and again. You maybe pick one up, and there was a poem in it. Somebody had wrote it in, and they called it Slit Trench Christianity. And it was very, very true. You know, he said, this was more or less by an infantryman, I would think, that had wrote it. He said, when he was laying in his slit trench and they were getting bombarded and whatnot, please God, don't let it hit me, and I'll try and be a better person. And I thought, my God, he's right to that, because when you were under fire, under shell fire, and you couldn't do anything about it, just hope it didn't hit you, and you had the same, I thought, well, if that's true enough, that, you know, please God, don't let it hit me, and I'll try and, of course, after it was out, you forgot it all again, you know, just slipped your mind, but...
What about you've mentioned you were in a cellar, but what were the living conditions like? I mean, you obviously had to eat and use
toilets.
Oh,
yeah, well, there was a cookhouse. Of course, that was in the open. By some strange thing it never got hit. And what you used to do was go up, get your ration, whatever it was, and take it back down the cellar to eat it down there, like you never stuck up there and sat in the open. I used to think the cook should have had a medal for doing it in making grub in the open. But now you got it, and then you...
And for conditions like washing and toileting, what happened?
Well, what we had was we had an old tub, and somebody had got it wasn't a bathtub, but it was like just a big wooden tub. We had one with water and one we used to bath in. That when you're off duty, you know, when you were doing your 8 on and 8 off, in your off duty term, if you fancied a bath, that was the only thing, mind you. The water was absolutely filthy sometimes, but it's just a question of getting, or you could just strip off and just get top half. Well, but even that got somebody coming on, he said, the bastard, they blow the bloody bath up, you know. You got a shell off. I had photos of it where it was. I'll have to have a look for these, Harry. Where the tub, we even had blokes. One lad, he had a brother in the Royal West Kents, and they found out they were both together, more or less, and he used to come down to our place to have a bath, you know, this lad. And he showed you how bad they were, because he was a corporal when he came down, as was his brother, Corporal Clark, that was his name. And he used to enjoy being out of the front line, of course. More or less thought we were on holiday where we were. And he'd come down and he'd have a bath. He'd come down, like I say, he was a corporal, come down, and then the other one, I can't think of his first name now. I used to take him back up to in his duck, like take him back up to the next time we saw him, it was a sergeant come down, which wasn't long, maybe about 3 weeks. Next time he come down, he was acting sergeant major. They were getting knocked off like flies up where he was. And then eventually, that was it. He got killed. So in the space of about 2 months, he was a corporal, sergeant major, and he's dead.
Were you seeing wounded and dead coming back?
Not so much where we were, because, to be honest, there was these casualty clearing stations, and they had the ambulances and whatnot. But we were more intent, I must be honest about it, was keeping your road end down and when you're going out to ships.
It must have been your own artillery must have been close by. I mean, in such a
they were up at the sharp end. There was all we used to do was take shells, ammunition, stores up to these dumps, and then they had their own transport lorries and whatnot to come down and pick them up and take them up there. So it was just like weed dropper, they'd take them on. And until it actually finished, we never realised how close everything was. It was very compact. In fact, one of the German propaganda things they were saying, we have the biggest prisoner of war camp in Europe. The only difference is they're feeding themselves. Which didn't make us feel any too. Because by this time, of course, with this American general sticking where he was, it gave him plenty of time to for the German general, whoever he was, I didn't know the names, and he'd brought his artillery and whatnot round, and they just circled us.
Did you feel after a while that you were never going to get off the beach?
Well, after we didn't know it at the time, but there was preparations, I think, at one time to evacuate. I think Montgomery put his foot down there then, said, "Oh no, we're not going to. We're here," because the Yanks would have been quite happy to come out. I'm not getting at them. They were easily led, I think.
Did you come across any Americans in the beachhead?
Oh yes, we used to pass them all the time, because we were the only British company with the ducks, and it was all Yanks with their ducks. Like I said before, they had a Yankee where if any of their ducks got hit or anything like that, they used to just take them up to a dump and dump them. When any of ours got it, we had to go to their dump to cannibalise stuff off them, and even our workshops did that. They didn't believe in going around with anything that was untoward. Well, we were scratching around to getting bits and pieces off their ducks. But
did you get any opinions of the morale or spirits they were in with seeing them daily?
They were all right. They had better stuff than we had. They had better equipment than we had. The only thing that they didn't have was that we used to get a ration of beer, a bottle of beer a week. Little bottle about that big. And you'd hear these Yanks come down, one in particular, when I look back at him, he was built like Sonny Liston, a big coloured bloke. And he used to come to the... He used to know when we used to get the ration. And he used to come to the top of the cellar steps. Any of you guys got any beer? You know? And they're piss off here. Who said that? But what they could do, and what we did do, we used to barter with them. Now, when we were fetching stuff off the ships, they used to say, of the lads coming in, where's the naffy ration, hold number 3 or number 4 or whatever. So you'd go out to there, you'd very like sometimes get sidetracked if they wanted shells, petrol, food, and there was a officers on the boat used to, round there, get there out, and used to, two or three of you would be lined up. But if occasionally, you might be lucky. And we were lucky one day, I was lucky one day. Used to get a red cap, military policeman, and they'd be on the beach. And they used to know when different things, and they'd get on with you to go up the ship. And they went to this naffy place, and they were unloading these little crates about that big square, putting them down. And by this time, of course, we had a good idea what was in these crates, whatever it was, you know. And when we got loaded, coming back, and maybe be about 10 minutes, quarter of an hour back to the shore. And he kept looking around like, "What's in there?" I said, "Well, from the looks of it, it'll be rum." And it was like jars about that big of navy rum. "Oh, I've never had a drop of spirit," he said, "since we come here." Well, I just let him talk. And I said, "Well, you'll have to get well in with one of the lads at the stores, you know, where we're done." "Oh, not much chance of that," he said. I said, "Well," I said, "they have been known to get broke, these cases." "What do you mean?" I said, "Well, sometimes when they drop them off the ship and hit the deck," I said, "sometimes the case breaks." And he said, "That's how I know what's in." "Ah." And then he suggested, "I don't suppose there's any chance of one breaking now." I said, "Oh, every chance." So I slowed down practically to a stop, and I went in the back, and I opened one of these cases up, and sure enough, there was two. I forget the name of them, but the glass containers, and they were just like two bottles of treacle, you know, the navy rum. It was really thick stuff, and so I put one. I didn't tell him where I put mine. I put one behind his seat. I had one behind my seat. And he said, "Well, you know where we are stationed?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "We'll go up there first." So we went up there, and he shouted his sergeant, or whoever he was, this little one's called me, he shouted to the sergeant, "Oh, sergeant, I've got something for you now." So while he was doing his business with him, I was getting my out the road in my little secret little place so that he couldn't see it for future reference. Anyway, when we come in, and he got his bottle, and I got mine.